All right, away we go. Hour number two of our radio program. That's right. It is the Zach Gelb Show, coast to coast on the Infinity Sports Network. We'll put the college basketball talk on the back burner for a bit, as we're right in the thick of March Madness with the brackets being released on Sunday. And we do have the NCAA tournament starting tonight in Dayton. But we got to continue our prospect profile series. And usually we do have to take a stop in Georgia because they always have a bunch of prospects, especially under Kirby Smart, for the NFL draft. So let's get to that right now.
The Combine is over and the 2025 NFL draft is almost upon us.
With the first pick in the 2024 NFL Draft, the Chicago Bears select Caleb Williams. The Carolina Panthers select Bryce Young. The Jacksonville Jaguars select Trevor Lawrence.
The Cincinnati Bengals select Joe Burrow.
Let's find out whose stock is falling and whose stock is rising.
Jackpot, baby!
And now it's time for the Zach Gelb Show to give you an inside look at some of the biggest draft prospects in this edition of Prospect Profile.
Three players from Georgia expected to go in the first round, all from the defensive side of the ball: Jalen Walker, Mykel Williams, and also Malachi Starks. So let's welcome in a former Georgia quarterback, now does a great job as an ESPN college football analyst, and that's our pal Aaron Murray. Aaron, appreciate the time as always. How you been?
Man, doing good. Just excited. My Georgia Bulldogs obviously making noise on the football field, but finally we got something to cheer for on the hardwood, and the baseball's doing well. We're sort of becoming an everything school, so a lot to be excited about for the Bulldogs.
Yeah, and we had John Fanta on the other day to talk a little college basketball, and he's like, oh, everyone's saying Gonzaga's definitely going to win. He actually liked Georgia to pull off that victory in the first round, so we'll have to wait and see. Let me get to the NFL draft stuff, though. Jalen Walker, I think he's going to be the first player from Georgia selected. I saw Daniel Jeremiah in his latest mock draft actually had him going fifth overall to the Jacksonville Jaguars. What do you think his ceiling could be in the NFL?
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about a guy, one, I've got to know him over the past couple of years, just incredible human being, hard worker. And you say that about most of these guys. I mean, kind of when you're under the Kirby Smart thumbprint, you learn to work like a pro day in and day out, the scheme, the way the practices are formatted. But, you know, I would say good size, not maybe elite size, but just that tenacity to be able to get after the quarterback, that tenacity to get out the line of scrimmage, that first burst, which is so critical for a defensive end outside linebacker, being able to get off the ball and be disruptive. I mean, that's what the college games turn into. That's what the NFL games turn into. Who can get that first initial burst when the ball is snapped to be able to either protect the quarterback, obviously in a pass-happy league, or be able to get after the quarterback? I think Jalen's obviously athletic enough to do that. Extremely athletic to get out there and cover in space as well. Maybe not necessarily Mykel Williams' strength, you know, more of that big physical rush end, can still drop a little bit at times, but Jalen's someone that you could do both with and feel really comfortable with him playing in space as well. So not surprised at all that a lot of people have him in their top five, top 10 heading into the NFL draft.
Do you think Mykel Williams is a better player than Jalen Walker? Just wondering.
They're very different. I mean, you can just look at just the pure size and strength. I mean, Mykel's what, 6'5", you know, 240, 250. Jalen more that 6'1", 235, 240. Like I said, more that guy that can rush and drop, do a little bit more, maybe put him in the middle linebacker spot in some situations as well and have him rush from that spot. Where Mykel is still that big physical, set the edge, be a little bit more aggressive against the run, can still obviously get after the quarterback and use his strength and speed that way. But you know, it depends on the scheme. You know, I know that's somewhat of a cop-out answer, but, you know, they're very different in what they do and how they do it, even though they play, you know, quote-unquote similar positions and can do a lot of the same things. So it depends on where they end up. But, you know, with the way defenses are nowadays to combat the offenses, you see with a lot of like these still in the NFL, the quick bubbles, they get the ball to talent, you know, speed guys in space. It's nice to have a guy like Jalen that you feel comfortable with, that has the speed that could drop out and do so much for you defensively.
Yeah, I'm fascinated by where Mykel Williams is going to go, because it felt like a month ago, and I follow a lot of these mock drafts, that Jalen and Mykel, they were both pretty close, not that far, you know, a lot of separation in a lot of these mock drafts. They're both going in the top 10, both going in the top 15. I know it's only one mock draft. I told you where Jalen's going five to the Jaguars. Daniel Jeremiah has Mykel Williams falling all the way to 28th to the Lions. So is the stock kind of falling on him from things that you're hearing?
Yeah, I mean, I think the film was not as sexy as Jalen. I think Jalen really had an incredible season. You know, I thought he was a really good leader on that side of the football. I thought he made big time plays in big time games. I mean, as you talk to Georgia fans in the state, they feel like every single game, you know, whether it was against Texas or against Bama or, you know, whoever along the way, when a play needed to be made, everyone was looking to Jalen Walker to be that guy. And I think that's where he kind of separated himself from a playmaking standpoint of being able to go out there and kind of put the defense on his back a little bit at times, where Michael, a little bit quiet, but that's Kirby's defense at times too. And I think that's where we get lulled to sleep so much when we look at stats. We're so worried about, you know, how many sacks did someone get? How many tackles for loss? How disruptive were they were? When really Michael plays such a different at times position once again than Jalen, where he's asked to take on double teams. He's asked to set the edge. He's not always asked just to, hey, put your head down and see red, go get red, go attack the quarterback. So I think Jalen was asked to do more, that was able to make more splash plays. So if you are an evaluator at times and you're watching tape on Georgia, Jalen jumps out more. But for a defense that's looking for a five technique to be able to set the edge, you know, that's a guy that Michael or a team that Michael is going to kind of gravitate towards. And, you know, if they're in the top 15 or top 20, they may take an opportunity on him.
I think that's the toughest part. You have so many great players in college on Georgia, especially the defensive side of the ball. Look at the Eagles with Nolan Smith and Jalen Carter and Jordan Davis. All those guys ended up going in the first round, and all three of those guys probably should have gone higher in the draft. You know, obviously Trayvon Walker, based off the potential, ended up going number one overall a few years ago, even though I thought it should be Aiden Hutchinson. Since you have so many good players, I think it's so tough to evaluate a Georgia defensive player because you all know they're good, but with how many mouths there are to feed in that defense, it's kind of like, how could you tell who's going to end up being great? And sometimes it makes those players fall back a little bit in the draft just because of how many people eat on that defense.
Yeah, I agree with that. But I do think that there's one guy to me that I've just been so impressed with throughout his tenure at the University of Georgia. That's Malachi Starks. I mean, from day one, the interception versus Oregon in his first game to what he did last year. And we talk about the versatility of Jalen Walker. You know, when I watch Malachi Starks throughout the season, it's absolutely incredible what Kirby and that Stephen Schumann asked him to do, from playing obviously the safety position where he's most comfortable, free safety, strong safety, blitzing, you know, coming down and some sort of, they bring like a cross dog blitz with the linebackers, playing low middle of the field, to even at times last year being essentially a nickel, a cornerback, the third cornerback. They'd bring an extra safety. They'd move Malachi to the slot. And going back to, once again, what offenses look like nowadays in college football, in the NFL, a lot of times you're going against the best receiver. You know, a decade ago when I played, your best receiver was the Z. So he's to the field in 2x2. And then if you went 3x1, you know, we'd put like AJ Green backside as the X. Now all of a sudden you're putting a lot of your best players, your best receiver, as at number two in the slot, trying to create matchups against safeties, trying to create matchups against linebackers. And they were comfortable enough to put Malachi in the slot as nickel, playing zone, blitzing, and then also playing a lot of man-to-man coverage. So, you know, his versatility, I know the 40 wasn't maybe as great as a lot of people or he was hoping it would be, but his ball skills, his physicality, his football savvy and smarts, and then once again, like that, the ability to play safety and nickel, I just think he is so valuable. He's been unbelievable during his 3 years at Georgia, and I think he's going to be a great addition to whoever does select him in the first round.
So between Jalen, Malachi, and Michael, do you think Malachi actually has the highest ceiling?
I do. I think he does, because I think there's less questions. I think Jalen, you know, I still worry a little bit about the size. I think Michael physically is as gifted as anyone that you're going to be able to get. Once again, I just don't know if he's going to be, just like Georgia, put in a position to make splash play after splash play. But when I do look at a guy like Malachi, I think defenses and defensive coordinators, with everything they try to do to slow down these offenses nowadays, look at him and say, man, we can do so much with that guy tomorrow. And he's so football smart. So, you know, I love all three. You know, I think we both agree that all three will be hearing their names called at some point during the first round. But I do think Malachi and his football savvy and his versatility is going to make a huge impact.
And in his latest mock draft, Daniel Jeremiah has Malachi Starks actually going in the top 15, 13th overall to the Miami Dolphins. Aaron Murray here with us. All right, while I have you here, since we just talked about a bunch of the Georgia players that are expected to go in the first round, quarterback-wise, you know, at the end of the season, you know, I thought it was a very 50-50 conversation on Cam Ward and Shedeur Sanders. Now, as we inch closer and closer to the draft, a little over a month away, it seems like a slam dunk that Cam Ward's going to go in front of Shedeur Sanders. How do you evaluate those two quarterbacks?
Yeah, I mean, listen, I hate this draft class, to be honest. You know, I don't want to be picking any of these guys really in the top 15 picks. You know, for me personally, if I'm looking for someone in the first round, especially someone in that top five, top 10, top 15, they better have something that's elite. And not just the off the field stuff, but like on the field, arm strength, size, toughness, versatility, escapability, the ability to run like Lamar, like give me something that is on the elite side. And I do think Cam Ward has top tier arm talent. I think there's some things when it comes to pocket awareness, when it comes to, you know, reeling in some of that playmaking. I mean, I remember kind of diagramming two or three times last year. He's rolling all the way to the right, gets to the sideline, throws the ball across the field to the opposite hash, both times resulting in interceptions. I'm like, hey, you can't do that. We all know you can't throw across your body. Hell, you can't throw the ball 30 yards across the field across your body for sure. So there are some things that need to get cleaned up. But when it comes to at least having something that I feel like is top 10 in the NFL, at least he has that arm strength. Where I look at Shedeur and I like his game. I think it's very consistent. Nothing to me screams he's going to be a top 10 in this. He's not going to be top 10, top 15 arm strength, athletic ability, accuracy. I think he's a good overall quarterback. But is he someone that is like I said, has that elite characteristic? I don't think so. So I'm with you. I think Cam goes one. I think Shedeur goes two. You know, after that, it's just a bunch of, you know, what I consider, you know, in a normal draft, third round quarterbacks that are going to get the ability because of this year's draft to maybe end up at the end of the first round, second round, or early third round, based on just the weakness of the class.
Yeah, I think the third quarterback in this draft, from what people are saying, is Jackson Dart. If you would have told me at the end of the season that Jackson Dart would have been a first round pick, I wouldn't believe it. And I talked about this to open up the show. Like, I went through the entire first round. I'm like, okay, where could Jackson Dart go where I wouldn't be irate? And I said 21 to Pittsburgh. But still, I would not feel good about using a first round pick on Jackson Dart.
No, and I think I'm hoping teams will be smart enough. But I mean, listen, the NFL this year has been pretty bad, or this past season, when it came to quarterback play. I mean, these teams are desperate to try and make something work with quarterbacks. But still, like, it's to waste a pick on a first round quarterback. I mean, listen, I cover college football year long. It was not a good quarterback year when it came to college sports. It was just a bunch of average guys that played in really good offenses. And I covered Jackson Dart as an analyst for ESPN. I want to say three or four times over the past two seasons. You know, been to Ole Miss, have sat down with Lane, have watched him in person, watched him warm up, watched him play the game, covered him. You know, studied a lot of tape. I think he's a good quarterback. He's a great competitor. He's a tremendous leader. But once again, when it comes to like those elite traits that what it takes to be a guy that you feel like you can win a Super Bowl. And that's what you're drafting. If you're drafting someone in the first round, a guy that you could believe could maybe get you deep in the playoffs or possibly a Super Bowl berth. He doesn't have those.
Yeah.
So I don't want to waste a draft pick on him. And there's one guy that, you know, I do like, I say, I like him that has some, a Superman characteristic, and that's Jalen Milroe. You know, I thought he would have developed more as a passer last year with the new offense and the new coach and kind of what was done at Washington. Very disappointed that he did not develop. But he's a guy that does have really good arm strength.
You know who Milroe reminds me of? He reminds me the same way we talked about Anthony Richardson, where it's like you see some moments, and he had better moments in college than Anthony Richardson, to be fair. Yeah. You're like, oh, this guy's going to be a star. And then there's like three or four weeks where the floor is just absolutely atrocious. There's no middle ground. There's no just like, hey, even when you're not playing well, you can still keep your team in the game. It's either all or nothing with Jalen Milroe, and that's what concerns me.
But that's what NFL coaches want, though. They want to – right now, if you're drafting a quarterback in the first round, any of these guys, you are hoping you hit a grand slam. What is a guy that potentially could give you a grand slam? Who's that guy that if you can develop for a year or two, has the characteristics to give you that? And to me, Jalen is the only one that has that of the guys remaining. Like I said, does have elite arm strength, probably the strongest arm of those guys. I like Tyler Shuck there at Louisville as well, but has a strong arm and is by far the most athletic quarterback, one of the most athletic guys in the draft. His issues come down to fundamentals. It's all on his feet. His feet were so bad last year. He's throwing out routes to the left. His feet are facing down the field. These are somewhat easy fixes. It's going to take some time to do. But if I'm swinging for the fences, give me the guy that can at least make those home run plays. And right now, Jalen's the only one left after those top two guys that could do it. So if I'm taking a chance, I'd rather take a chance on a guy like that.
And also, just going back to Jackson Dart, wrapping up with Aaron Murray, it's like you look at the Kentucky and the Florida games. Those are obviously things that are going to be held against him. But and I know he could put up a ton of good numbers when Lane Kiffin's your coach. So I'm not saying like he's a horrible quarterback. But when we're talking a first-round quarterback, you know, that game up against Georgia, they didn't win that game because of their offense. They won that game because of their defense that game. Jackson Dart wasn't impressive to me in that one, too.
Well, we go back to the game we just talked about, Georgia defenders, defensive players to start this conversation. Go back and watch that Alabama-Georgia game. Jalen made Malachi look so slow. I was shocked. I mean, I'm watching the tape. I'm like,
that first half, yeah.
He made Malachi look like his feet were stuck in sand. I mean, that's the type of athleticism that quarterback has. And he made Georgia's defense, three guys going to be drafted in the first round, look slow. And you can't tell me that you cannot figure out. I mean, hell, Jalen Hurts coming out, I thought still had some question marks as a thrower. Hardworking kid, good kid, a lot of the same characteristics as Jalen. Great leader, needed to develop as a passer. He has done that now on top of the athleticism, and look what he's done. I'm not saying that we have the next coming of Jalen Hurts or anything like that. I'm just saying he has it factors that excite me that if you can figure out a way to kind of bottle some stuff up, you could be talking about a pretty special player eventually.
So you would say your three quarterbacks in this draft are Cam Ward 1, Shedeur Sanders 2, and then Jalen Milroe 3, if you were a GM?
Yeah, those are my three. If I'm a GM, I'm going with those. You know, I like Will Howard. I think Tyler Shuck is pretty good there at the Louisville. Listen, I'm not down on Jackson Dart at all. There's just nothing elite to me, you know, size or arm. I think athleticism is good. But after that, it's just kind of...
What about Kyle McCord? Do you like him?
Yeah, third, fourth round. You know, I thought last year really impressed there at Syracuse. I thought he had some really good moments at Ohio State too, and you know, only his first year. So, you know, I think he's same thing. Third, fourth round talent. I like his arm. Thought the accuracy improved last year. You know, I thought the turnovers, besides the one game versus Louisville, I thought he controlled that decently. So, you know, a lot of good stuff from him. You know, I kind of see like Tyler Shuck, Will Howard, and him, and maybe even Quinn, kind of in that grouping somewhere in the third or fourth round.
He is Aaron Murray. Aaron, hey, before we let you run and we talk about this quarterback year not being a glamour year for quarterbacks, this time last year, if I probably said who would have been the number one overall pick, the first quarterback taken, I would have said Carson Beck. Obviously, Carson Beck is now at Miami. Are you still optimistic that he could turn around, or is what we kind of saw last year the true Carson Beck, where he's not as great as what people thought?
No, I think if he didn't have the UCL injury, I think we'd be talking about Carson Beck probably as that number three quarterback in this NFL draft. So, I mean, that's back-to-back seasons going back to a year ago that he probably would have been the fifth quarterback taken, which was top 12 quarterback. You know, might have had an opportunity to go to Minnesota instead of J.J. McCarthy. So he missed opportunity last year. Obviously, the UCL, I thought it was a good decision to come back for another season. But, you know, he's going to Miami, and Miami just lost all their playmakers. You know, like, who's he going to throw to next year? I think that's a big question. I mean, Miami had three really talented receivers, all those guys going to the NFL. They still got talent, and Mario's done a good job recruiting, but he's going to have to figure out some new targets and a new offense, in which right now he's not practicing because he can't throw the football. So I still think overall, great size, good athleticism. I don't think the UCL injury is going to impact arm strength. I think he's extremely accurate. I thought last year that as an offense as a whole, Georgia was just not good around him. So I'm still high on him. I still think he's an opportunity to be a first-round quarterback come 2026.
Former Georgia quarterback Aaron Murray, now does a great job on ESPN as a college football analyst. Aaron, appreciate you jumping on board with us.
Appreciate you, and go Dogs in the tournament.
There you go. Aaron Murray joining us on the Zach Gelb Show on the Infinity Sports Network. We come out with our latest Aaron Rodgers pie chart on his next destination when we return in 5 minutes. Welcome back in. It is the Zach Gelb Show on the Infinity Sports Network. I'm laughing because I was looking down, you know, reading a few notes, and then I hear Hickey's voice in my ear. Do you have a liner here? And I'm like, how the heck did Hickey get there? And now I see Azarim back. Why are you in the bathroom, Azarim? What was going on? You could speak on the air.
I was talking to our boss.
Who? Mayernick?
Yeah.
Oh, well, now I got to go yell at our boss during the break.
No, it was on me.
No. I got to yell at Mayernick now. We're trying to do a radio show here, and I got the boss and David Mayernick talking to our guy Alex Azarim.
No, I went to him first. So.
Oh, did you? Were you complaining about me already?
No.
I'm kidding with you. I'm just teasing with you. I thought you had like a Tracy Morgan incident or something like that. Where I looked up and maybe you were like projectile vomiting. Did you see that last night, by the way?
I did.
How could you miss it? I felt so bad for Tracy Morgan. Sampton, did you see that too last night? That was absolutely crazy. I've never, like, when you sit close at an NBA game, there's nothing like it. And the access at NBA games are just ridiculous if you have those seats. And we've seen, like, things spill, right? A ball goes into the stand and there's, like, a Diet Coke or beers that get spilled. Someone's drunk and they spill a beer. I've never seen someone sitting courtside projectile vomit, Santer. That was just wild.
Yeah, and the first initial reports were not only did he vomit, but he was bleeding out of his nose.
I thought that something unfortunately tragic was like about to happen.
Seriously, and they had to like wheelchair him out, and people said he was trying to stand up out of the wheelchair afterwards, and he couldn't get up. Turns out he just had food poisoning. He sent some pictures from the hospital with all these nodes all over him and in the hospital bed, but it was a scary scene, man.
It was.
Because Tracy Morgan has a crazy past, so like I wouldn't put anything past him.
And I know that we get so lame on the internet, right? And everyone's got to get clicks and stuff like that. All these aggregators and all these accounts that are posting the video last night, you know, maybe this is me actually having a heart here. The guy just projectile vomited. If you wanted to see it, you were going to be able to see it. Do I need every aggregator and every account posting about it? You know, I thought it was a little insensitive last night to keep on just sharing video after video of Tracy Morgan. You know, if he was just drunk as a skunk at the game, all right, shame on him, you clown him. But you knew something serious was going on, and how everyone just kept on sharing and sharing and making their comments about it last night. That was a little bit too much for me. And I'm not usually like that. Like, I'm going to defend someone coming up in a bit where I think he's getting criticized and it's absolutely ridiculous. But the oversharing of that video was a little bit too much for me last night. So is this guy Josh Brownie the one that recorded this? So this is courtesy of his Twitter. He was talking about the Tracy Morgan incident last night at Madison Square Garden.
I saw commotion on the court. I did not see Tracy Morgan throw up. I saw that on Twitter after the fact. So I just saw people rushing to him, and I saw him taking the towel, go to his nose multiple times, his face, and then I saw red spots in the towel. I don't know if it's part of the towel. It was an NBA towel from what I could see, but it looked like he was bleeding from his nose. That's why I said what I said. And after that, he tried to stand up and just struggled to stand up, and then they wheeled him out. Dude's been through a lot, and wish him the best right now. Hope he's okay tonight.
When was the last time you had food poisoning, Santer? Can you remember?
Yeah, it was like 3 weeks ago or so. Actually, no, that wasn't food poisoning. That was actually something else. I felt like I had food poisoning because I was, you know, hugging the porcelain, you know, praying to the porcelain gods for like 8 hours straight. That was about a month ago. The last time I had real food poisoning was probably 3 or 4 years ago. I don't know what it is. Something about oysters just gets me.
Oh, really?
So I had some oysters.
Do you know that going in?
So I've had oysters probably about 15 times in my life, and 2 or 3 of the 15 times I've gotten sick.
Yeah.
The first time I thought it was bad oysters. The second time I thought maybe I was allergic. The third time
maybe
was
they weren't dead. Maybe they're just swimming around. You didn't realize it. Around that Samter stomach of yours.
Something's swimming around.
Knock on wood, because whenever I do this, it ends up happening.
Yeah, you're calling out tomorrow because you're going to be sick.
So I've had like a stomach bug before. But I haven't had food poisoning, I think, going back to college. There was this really good truck in college. Really good food truck. And they made this salad that, like, it sounds so lame, but it was such a good salad. And I
don't think I've ever heard that before. A good salad. It sounds just salad.
Well, there's very good salads. It was like there was a bunch of like it, I don't even know how to describe it. It was this Italian food truck, and they just made this. It was unhealthy. Let's be real.
Okay, that
but
makes
they
sense.
Made like a killer salad, and I had it, and there was like there was an egg in it, and there was some other stuff I forget, and clearly everything wasn't cooked because I got back to the apartment that night. And, you know, I was in the bathroom for 4 hours, you know, so that was the last time I remember getting food poisoning. Anyway, let's get to the latest Aaron Rodgers pie chart rankings. And no, hopefully we don't get food poisoning off this if this pie is not cooked enough. Here is Cam Hayward on the Not Just Football podcast. Will he do a darkness retreat to recruit Aaron Rodgers? Let's get to this.
I ain't doing that darkness retreat. I don't need any of that crap. Like, either you want to be a Pittsburgh Steeler or you don't. That's simple. That's the pitch. Like, if you want me to recruit, that's the recruiting pitch. You know, Pittsburgh Steelers, if you want to be part of it, so be it. If you don't, no skin on my back.
Yeah, I think that's where everyone's at right now. You know, Aaron, just make a decision. I understand the drama that comes with Aaron Rodgers. No one should be surprised that we're waiting and waiting and waiting on Aaron Rodgers because he's a drama whore and he likes drama. So he has the NFL world right now by the you know what, and he's going to wait and delay and delay and delay and delay. You know, I've seen people like come out today and be like, oh, it's a tough decision. Well, what's so tough about this decision? There's four options. You know, Minnesota is your preferred destination. I don't think they're that interested in him. So if Minnesota's off the board, or if you're waiting for Minnesota to officially say no, then your other destinations are retirement, the Steelers, or the Giants. And I would have to imagine that in his rankings, it's the Vikings 1, it's the Steelers 2, then the Giants 3, and retirement 4th. But I don't think the Vikings are all that realistic for him because I do believe they're going to rock and roll with J.J. McCarthy. Now, this is from Adam Schefter. So we have two cuts here from Adam Schefter. Adam Schefter actually has floated out Kirk Cousins potentially going back to the Minnesota Vikings. Kirk Cousins right now is the backup quarterback with the Atlanta Falcons, but he's highly compensated because he's supposed to be their starter. Then they drafted Michael Penix Jr. Here is Aaron Rodgers, Adam Schefter, just floating out the possibility of Kirk Cousins going back to Minnesota.
What if Minnesota just waits around till after the draft and then somehow figures out a way for Kirk Cousins to get to Minnesota as the backup to J.J. McCarthy? Wouldn't that make some sense, right? And maybe the Vikings can wait it out. The Falcons have been determined not to release him. I think the Falcons want to be able to say, we got something back for this guy that we paid so much to get. So maybe Minnesota says, you know what, it's worth it for us. We'll give you a sixth-round draft pick. They haven't solved the number two. JJ's coming off the injury. You still don't know what you're going to have. Let's solidify the position with Kirk Cousins. Doesn't that make sense?
Here's my question. Why would Kirk Cousins be interested in that? Wouldn't you just rather just stay in Atlanta? The only reason you're going to leave Atlanta is if you go be a starter somewhere. So why would you go to Minnesota? Maybe you could argue Minnesota's better weapons with Justin Jefferson and Jordan Addison and Hockenson. He was just there, though, and, you know, he left. So I'm not saying that you can't go home and maybe, hey, Kirk Cousins could view this as J.J. McCarthy's just not that dude. We'll let J.J. McCarthy struggle. Then they'll be clamoring for a spot where, I don't say he was loved there, but he was well-liked. We're in Atlanta where I could argue that Michael Penix Jr., and I hate to argue injury, but he's had a good bill of health the last 2-3 years. Before that, though, he was a walking injury. So I don't see why Kirk would really have the appetite to go from Atlanta to Minnesota, Santer. Do you see something there that I don't?
The only thing I could say, I would think, would be one of two things. One, he just feels so slighted by the Falcons. Like, hey, come here, we'll sign this big contract. 2 months later, we're going to draft your replacement and then replace you midway through the season. Mm-hmm. He might just be like, I want to get the hell out of here. I don't care where I go. He obviously has roots in Minnesota. He was there for a while, so he probably would rather be there than in Atlanta anyway.
Isn't it a little embarrassing going back to Minnesota at this rate?
Yes, but
you're kind of like crawling back to Minnesota there.
The other part of it, yes, maybe Michael Penix is more injury prone, but we also don't know the injury timeline for McCarthy, like when he's going to be fully healthy, ready to go, and ready to get back on the field. Maybe Cousins is going to start for part of the season.
So I'm not yelling at you here, to be clear. But this idea that McCarthy is not going to be ready by week one, you know, there's some conflicting reports if he's going to be ready by training camp. But they kind of gave a positive remark on that, right, with the guy that we had on last week, the Minnesota reporter. They kind of gave a positive remark at the combine on him. Nothing set in stone. And I know that he had another surgery, but like, geez Louise, this is the longest recovery from a meniscus ever. So it would be very hard pressed for me to think that JJ McCarthy is not going to be ready by the start of the season.
And it's not necessarily whether or not it was Matthew Coller who we had.
Thank
he was
you.
Great. He was fantastic.
Yeah, he was.
It's not necessarily whether or not he's ready, but there's one thing about being cleared and ready to play, and another thing about getting that mental block of having your knee,
sure,
you know, back to normal. And he's a running quarterback. He's a guy who needs to be mobile. So maybe he's just not, he might be cleared, healthy enough, but maybe he's just not quite there yet. He needs to get back into the playbook, needs to get back into the rhythm, the timing, and who knows how long that's going to take him. He's probably fine, but if I'm Kirk Cousins, I probably have a better chance of starting for the Vikings than I do for the Falcons.
To start the season, I guess, because there is, I guess, a very small chance on the McCarthy health that he has another setback. But I think at this rate, you're just going from backup to backup. I really do. And I don't think Kirk Cousins, if he goes from Atlanta to Minnesota, the juice is worth the squeeze if I'm him. Now, let's get one more from Adam Schefter. This one, the Pat McAfee Show and Aaron Rodgers' future.
If Aaron Rodgers had his way, I believe that he would like to sign with the Minnesota Vikings.
Mm-hmm.
Do I think that that's happening? Not today. Not next week. Do I think it's out of the question? Not entirely.
Ooh.
Do I think it's likely? No. But, again, it's just lingering out there. I think he knows that Minnesota would be an ideal situation. He could go try to beat the Green Bay Packers, which I'm sure he'd like to do. He could go try to continue to own the Chicago Bears. But I just don't know that it's practical for the Vikings. The team is behind J.J. McCarthy. It believes in J.J. McCarthy. If they bring in Aaron Rodgers, who knows what type of impact and influence that will have on the quarterback who is their future.
The only retort I would have to that is that they believe in McCarthy so much, and I think J.J. McCarthy is going to be the week one starter. I don't think they're signing Aaron Rodgers. Why hasn't Kwesi Adofo-Mensah or Kevin O'Connell come out yet and just say, hey, we're not doing the Aaron Rodgers stuff. J.J.'s our guy. That's the only retort. Not to respond to everything, but there's obviously enough legs here where this has been enough in the conversation. So here's where I'm at right now. I think 65% Aaron Rodgers to the Pittsburgh Steelers. 23% Aaron Rodgers to the New York Football Giants, 10% to the Minnesota Vikings, and then a 2% chance that he retires. I would still be very surprised if he's not starting for the Pittsburgh Steelers. What is interesting to me is if, let's say, Minnesota goes, Aaron, we're not interested, and the Steelers go, you know what, we're going to listen to Cam Hayward. We shouldn't have to be begging for you. We're just going to bring back Russell Wilson. Then, would he go to the Giants or would he retire? That's, to me, the interesting question. And I don't think Aaron Rodgers, he wouldn't be happy, I think, going to the Giants, but I think he would go play another season because I don't think he's ready to retire. I'd be very surprised if he ends up retiring. All righty, we'll take a timeout. We'll get into this Michigan baseball player next and also the disaster in the NIT JV move by the NIT. We'll get to that on the other side. Update time first, though. Here's the Ackman Rich Acker. All right, it is Zach Yelp Show on the Infinity Sports Network. So let's get to two stories, one on the NIT and one in college baseball. I didn't think those two sports or those two backgrounds are going to be talked about in this talk show today, the NIT and college baseball. I wasn't expecting that. So South Alabama, they were invited to the NIT, right? Think about that. All right. You get invited to the NIT. There's two other tournaments, not the NCAA tournament. I know we don't really pay much attention to them, but you could go or you don't go, but it's a nice way to continue your season if you don't make the big dance, right? Now in the NIL era, if you're a bigger school, a lot of those teams, they reject going to those tournaments and they go, okay, we just got to start, you know, focusing on recruiting. So every school has a different thought process on that. I remember one year Temple got screwed out of the NCAA tournament. They kind of went on a run. They made it to the Final Four of the NIT when I was calling their games. They played at Madison Square Garden. It was fun in the moment. Outside, if you're not associated with that school, do I think anyone really gives a rat's ass about the NIT right now? No, I do not. But South Alabama, it's a principle here. They get invited to the NIT, and it shows you how much of a joke the NIT is. So their coach, Richie Riley, was then, after he already told his team that they're in the NIT and he got informed that they were in the NIT, the offer got rescinded because UC Riverside, who there was either a miscommunication or they were never contacted or it never got to them, they were going to go to the other tournament. Then they hear they got an invite to the NIT. They're like, oh, no, we're actually going to go to the NIT. So think about that. You are Richie Riley, who's at South Alabama. You tell your kids, hey, we're going to continue our season. We're going to play in the NIT. And then you go back and you go, oh, there's no postseason play for us. So Riley told AL.com he was informed late Sunday evening that his team has been invited to the NIT because UC Riverside declined its invitation due to a previous commitment to play in the College Basketball Invitational, a tournament with no NCAA affiliation. However, shortly after, according to ESPN, Riley informed his team that it would play in the NIT. UC Riverside got out of its commitment to the CBI and accepted the NIT bid. I tell Sun Belt Conference Commissioner Keith Gill and NCAA Senior Vice President of Basketball Dan Gavitt, I'm going to tell my guys. They're like, go ahead. So I tell the team, Riley told AL.com, Gill and Gavitt then call him back whatever time it was, 10:45, 11 o'clock, and go, Dan, UC Riverside is back in. You know, Dan calls the coach. He goes, UC Riverside is back in. I hate that we had to do this. That's ridiculous. You know, the NIT is a joke, but that's really a joke. You know, how dysfunctional can they be in the NCAA? And I know the NCAA is rotten. I know it's disgusting, and a lot of slimy things go on, even though we highlight most of the good. But you tell a school, hey, we have an invite for you for the NIT. Can I tell my kids, the coach even paranoid, can I tell my kids, yes, you can tell your kids, UC Riverside's not going to go to the NIT, they're in the other tournament. Great. You tell your kids, we're going to the NIT. 15 minutes later, did you tell your kids yet? Yeah. Oh, no. Oh, no. Oh, no, 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 no. You're actually not in the NIT. We don't have a space for you. That's ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. And shame on all that were involved in the incompetent, and that's what I mean, incompetent decision-making process here. How you mess that up is ridiculous. It'd be like if I tell Samter, hey, you know, Mike, we're giving you a raise. Tell your family. Go tell that we've given you a big raise here. And then 15 minutes later, oh, you already posted about it? You told everybody? Oh, somebody else said that they were back in, so the money has to go to them, and you don't get it. That's just a really crappy thing to do. A crappy thing to do. And these kids at South Alabama, you know, they got screwed over here. And there's no other way to address this. Now, let's get to this college baseball story. I think you guys would be impressed here.
This one's more fun.
Mitchell Voit. Do you know he's not the first person to do a celebration like this? Soccer guys? You too? Any of you guys know the answer here? You know what I'm talking about?
I don't remember who it was, but I do remember seeing it and reading about it.
So Kevin Clancy, our guy, KFC Barstool from Barstool Sports. I don't know the name of the soccer player. He could be a very famous soccer player or not. I'm not a soccer guy. He posted the video of the soccer player that did this all these years ago.
And the Robbie Fowler one?
Asking me to name a soccer player, Freddie Adu, Messi, Pele, yeah. That's about all I got.
He used to play for Liverpool.
Oh, and Rob Green. He was the goalie for England where the ball went through his legs.
Through, yeah.
Yeah. That's like about it with my soccer knowledge. But he, like, his celebration was obnoxious. It was funny. But he did the snorting the line celebration after scoring a goal once, stopped, did it again. Like, there's a way to do it, and then there's a way to just, okay, put it on steroids here. So this guy, Michigan infielder Mitchell Voigt, he hits a triple, he gets to third base, you have the foul line, and he basically snorts it. A real energetic celebration. I thought it was awesome. But you can't have any fun. I get it, right? It has a drug influence on it, right? With all, you know, you don't have to use your imagination here. Everyone knows what I'm talking about. So there are people that I think just look at it and go, all right, that's sports, that's fun, it's an innocuous celebration. And then you get the crowd, what about the children? Oh, what about the children? So this guy, Mitchell Voigt, had to apologize. I'm sure his manager was like, hey, not a great look. You know, we're not going to punish you for it. Just apologize and you move on, and he apologized. I had no issue with it. You know, I've unfortunately had friends pass away, you know, because of using drugs. So, like, if someone should be offended, right, you would think it's me. And I know that it hits home differently to everybody else. I just don't look at that action and be like, oh, Mitchell Voigt is condoning the use of cocaine there. You know, he did a celebration. It was a fun celebration. He snorted, in air quotes, the third base line, and that was that. Like, I didn't look at that. And if you're like saying, oh, what about the children? Well, then be a dad, be a mom, have a conversation, sit down your kid and go, if you have a problem with it, explain to them why you have a problem with it. But for this all to be thrown on Mitchell Voigt and how he's like, there's a portion of people that need to cancel him. Oh, give me a break. So he issued the apology, and I think we can move on. But sometimes I expect too much out of people in this world. But I hope everyone can now move on from this Mitchell Voigt situation. All righty, Zach Gelb Show, Infinity Sports Network. We react to Daniel Jeremiah's mock draft next.